Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello again, everybody. It's Pod Vader here with another exciting preview edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I hope you're enjoying our month of June, preview June, as I like to call it, as we are previewing all the divisions in the NFL going into the preseason mode of the 2016 campaign. Now, if you've missed the AFC East or if you've missed the AFC North, all you need to do is subscribe to the show. Go to iTunes. Next Fan Up is the show. Hit the subscribe button. You'll get those, plus all of our past episodes that we've done. You can also go to blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Our archive is all available right there for you. If you have an Android phone, maybe try the AHA Radio app. That's available in Google Play, also available in the iTunes Music Store. And it's on your car dashboard if you have one of those types of cars. 3 million cars already have the AHA Radio app. You might want to check that out. If you want to contact us, perhaps you've heard something that you thought was funny. I think you're going to hear one of those things a little bit later on in this particular program. Email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Perhaps you disagree with something that is said, and I guarantee you disagree a lot out there. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast, and of course, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or of course, just search Next Fan Up in the search bar on Facebook. The page will show right up. We have lots of things on our Facebook page. Probably the one most interesting thing that you'll see there are our list of the top 10 greatest players of all time for each team. That's listed on our Facebook page. Go check that out. I guarantee you're going to disagree on some of our choices there. Today, we bring you the preview of the AFC South. This will feature our Texans superfan, James, our Colts superfan, Dan, and our Jaguars superfan, Ryan. I have a few things that I disagree with in this particular podcast. I'm going to bring those up a little bit later on. Right now, here are the superfans of the AFC South.
This is Next Fan Up. I am your host for today, James, a super fan of the Houston, Texans. Joining me today is our super fan, Ryan, representing the Jacksonville Jaguars. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing great. That's right. Jaguar super fan right here. And I guess we're going off the top with, you can find me on Twitter at RyanM_DrHands. RyanM_DrHands. You can talk to me or not, but I'm just excited to talk some Jaguars football today.
All right. Well, excellent. I'm glad to see you have a Twitter handle longer than the word Jacksonville Jaguars. Makes it easy to remember. That derisive chuckle you heard is from our Indianapolis Colts superfan, Dan. How are you today?
I'm pretty giddy. It's not every day we get to talk about winners like we can here in the AFC South.
And unfortunately, we're having some technical difficulties with our Titans superfan, Jason. It's possible that he'll be joining us a little bit through the show. Otherwise, you can probably look for him on our college football preview that is never coming out, but he would, his team would probably rank pretty high in that particular preview. So, clearly not the first divisional preview we have done. We're going to jump right into it with a recap of what happened last year. It came right down to the wire, but the Houston Texans snuck out the divisional win, stealing it away from the Indianapolis Colts for, I believe, only the second time ever. Dan, you might have to correct me on that. Since the formation of the AFC South, did Indianapolis lose it? Is that approximately right?
Can't remember if it's two or three. There might have been one other one.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think, haven't the Texans won it a few times and Tennessee won it once? I don't know.
We did not come prepared for a history lesson. That's okay. We're like sharks, always looking forward, never looking back.
Well, the Jags have zero, so I can count those easy.
How many hands does that take, Dr. Hands?
Well, you know, I'll have to consult the others and get back to you.
I mean, I assume you can put one finger up on each hand and just use some basic subtraction.
Yep. Well, that's only since 2002, though. Well, I'm just hoping, you know, at some point we get one of those AFC South titles. We've got a few AFC Central titles. But no south yet. No south.
Getting us slightly back on track, Indianapolis finished second in the division behind a bad year from Andrew Luck, which we're going to get to pretty soon here. Your Jacksonville Jaguars finished third, and then Tennessee Titans drafting at the top of the first round, may be poised to repeat draft champions here. We'll just have to see how we all feel the Titans are going to do this year, if they make any step forward or just kind of remain in neutral down there. But to get this thing started, let's do the most important position, the one everybody talks about, and the one that is probably most lacking, question mark, in this division, the quarterback. So to start that off, I think we're all in agreement that Andrew Luck is the best in this division. Dan, why don't you wax poetically about your quarterback who's soon to become a made man now that he's on the last year of his rookie contract.
Yeah, no kidding. Rumor was that he was going to get a 10-year contract handed down by Jim Irsay. And that would be quite the contract. But Andrew Luck had a little bit of a down year last year. I think everyone saw that. Some of it was due to injury, but we'll never get the full detail out of that, out of Mr. Luck. He was put in a lot of bad situations with his bad offensive line, and his team was down early and often, so he often tried to make plays that just weren't there. But the future for him is bright. They're improving their offensive line. They brought in Joe Philbin to give him some time so that he can make those plays, and hopefully he'll get back to his 2014 form where he's able to get outside the pocket, make some throws down the field, and ultimately carry football. I think he's going to turn it over. We're going to hear his name at the top again, along the names of Andrew Luck, yeah, of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and you know, be back in that upper echelon of quarterbacks again. But if he doesn't take care of the football, then it's going to get ugly quick, and I don't know what'll come from him again in 2017.
I didn't hear any argument from Ryan, so I'm guessing he's complicit in naming Andrew Luck the best quarterback in the division. But, Dan, who do you think is next, and how far of a step back from Andrew Luck do you think that is?
Well, I think that Blake Bortles will be next for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think this is a big year for Blake Bortles, too. I mean, last year he started putting up some stats, but they were playing from behind a lot. Maybe the stats were inflated, maybe they weren't. I think Ryan will have an opinion on that. But I think this year is going to be huge for Blake Bortles to make that next step and really define how big of a step that is. What do you think, Ryan?
Oh, boy, do I ever have an opinion. Yeah, I think I would hope objectively we can all agree that Bortles is number two, and Andrew Luck obviously had a bad year, but that, you know, that's pretty much his only bad year. And I'm assuming he's going to bounce back, even though it would be fine with me if he didn't. But yeah, he's number one. But yeah, Blake Bortles showed a lot of improvement in his second year. And that was really huge to see. So I would also expect there to be improvement again for year three. I'm talking about taking care of the ball. I mean, Blake Bortles definitely has to do a better job of that. But we saw last year how explosive the Jags offense was, which was really exciting for me to watch because it had been a while. And I don't know if Bortles will ever be the so-called perfect kind of quarterback, like a Brady or a Manning kind of guy, because he is just a playmaker wheeling and dealing, and he's exciting for sure. And I think he's going to get better. And James, I'm not sure if I heard you correctly or not, saying that you thought maybe this is a weak position for the AFC South, but I think if nothing else, it's definitely an exciting position for the whole division. And I do think Bortles is second, but we still don't know what we're going to get out of Mariota yet. And Osweiler is a pretty big wild card for your team. I know I'll let you handle him. But Bortles got a lot of weapons, very exciting to watch either way. And I think he will improve on the turnovers. I think he's always going to commit turnovers, and that's going to be his style. But I think he'll take him down just a little bit this year, and the offense is going to continue to click and hopefully get better. And as far as number three, James, I'm going to let you take that over no matter who I say, I feel like. But I would go with Mariota most likely. But is it Osweiler in your opinion?
Well, I mean, before we hop onto the Brock bandwagon there, with okay. Bortles, I know that he had a lot of turnovers last year, but they weren't like back-breaking turnovers most of the time. We already mentioned how they were playing from behind quite a bit, and those are the kind of turnover numbers that you would expect from a quarterback playing from behind. You're going to have to make those high-risk, high-reward throws, and I think that we're going to see both his offensive performance numbers and his turnover numbers come down to earth just a little bit because, you know, Jacksonville has improved this offseason. Hopefully they won't get into that many shootouts. And, you'll take the fact that he doesn't throw for 300 yards if he's going to do 300 yards, you know, a touchdown or two and, you know, maybe one pick, but you guys are competitive the whole game. And then the only other thing that really worries me about Blake Bortles is him getting some form of shell shock. I mean, I know J.J. Watt is quite good. We'll get to him in a bit. But I believe he sacked Blake Bortles 7 times alone last year. And, you know, Bortles is, it seems like he might be holding onto the ball just a bit too long. Again, though, it's really hard to tell when your team is down by that much. The defensive line is just going to be able to go and run because they know you're going to pass, or go and rush, rather, because they know you're going to pass. So I think Jacksonville is going to be a really tough team to get a good prediction on, just because if their defense has improved to get them into close games, how do their offensive numbers turn out in the end?
Real quick, James, yeah, I love a few of the things that you said about Bortles, and I'm glad they're gaining some respect, but I have to both defend Bortles in something you said and maybe offend in something else you said, because he actually threw a lot of pick sixes, and they were back-breaking turnovers, so he's certainly done that and has a history, but I feel like he still will improve. And the other thing is, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who gets shell-shocked, and because he's just a big, strong dude. So I think, you know, anyone's going to play worse maybe by however many times they get hit, but he is certainly a guy who can take a bunch of them and get back up and keep going.
No, that's perfectly fair, and it's going to be exciting to see. I know I'm looking forward, and maybe as much as J.J. Watt is looking forward to seeing the Jags twice this year. But throughout the offseason, we've already kind of covered the Brock Osweiler move extensively. We're not going to rehash that whole thing. I will give the slight edge as far as just talent and opportunity to Marcus Mariota as the number three quarterback. Going back to how the division is set up, I know in years past we've had Andrew Luck is like the number one quarterback, a pretty sizable gap between 2, 3, and 4. I think that gap is definitely narrowed, and I think the gap between, you know, Mariota and Osweiler isn't exceptionally thin. Mariota adds another element with his running ability. He's going to be another guy that was tough to evaluate last year just based on how bad Tennessee was and how bad their offensive line was. Mariota got hurt. But I think that just from a raw talent perspective, he's probably got a better skill set than Brock does, if I'm being completely honest and not through super colored fan glasses or super fan colored glasses. There we go. Let's get the words in the right order. And then Brock, as I've already mentioned, we've burned through enough tape on Brock. I think he is an above-average quarterback. He may not have the potential to become a superstar quarterback, but you know we had to do something to upgrade our quarterback position, and I like the fact that we took a risk on him. So, any other closing thoughts on the Tennessee quarterback or on what Houston did to secure a quarterback before moving on to the running backs, guys?
I said I like Mariota better, but I'm still skeptical if that makes sense, because I I would put him number three just because of his potential, but I personally, I'm not sold on him, but that could also come from my massive hate of the Tennessee Titans. So I don't know.
All right. Well, let's go on to the running back position. I know there's been a lot of movement inside the division at running back, most notably with the Houston Texans, who went out and signed Lamar Miller. I think as far as a running back core, you know, based on what he was able to do in Miami with limited work, I will project us as having the best running back situation. That also is has a little bit baked in that our offensive line has been relatively stable. We did lose a center and a guard, but we replaced the guard with a maybe even upgraded at guard after losing Ben or after losing Brooks, which I was not prepared to think about when we actually lost him. But I don't know. We've got the ageless wonder in Frank Gore in Indianapolis to compete with for the title. We have DeMarco Murray, who's only really put together one full great season. And then we have, why don't you tell us, Ryan, how do you like your running back situation in Jacksonville?
Well, now that you've said everybody in this division, I feel like this is a very weak spot for the whole division, but it's only because personally I'm not a huge Lamar Miller guy, and I just kind of think he's another guy and not that special. And for the Jaguars, I didn't really like what I saw out of T.J. Yeldon last year, and I don't know what's kind of said about him or what the national opinion is of him. I'm not really sure. But I think last year he didn't really show much, but at the same time, his style, I hate to put him in the same sentence, but his style is similar to Le'Veon Bell. And Bell had a huge jump from year one to year two. So I'm certainly not giving up on the guy. I just didn't like what I saw from the first year. And I absolutely love Chris Ivory, but he could be too old by now. I don't know. But throughout his whole career, he's just a hard runner, and I love watching that guy play. I hope he'll still be good. But basically, across the board, I'm not really sure what to think about the backs in this whole division because Frank Gore was great. And for Tennessee, you don't know if you're going to get the Cowboys Murray or the Eagles Murray, and they have a rookie as well who knows what's going to happen there, even though they're focusing on running the ball. So I'm still optimistic about what Yeldon could become, but so far in Jacksonville, if nothing else, we're used to awesome running backs and my favorite player of all time, Fred Taylor, and then obviously Maurice Jones-Drew, just awesome all-time kind of talents. So we'll see. Maybe I'm just spoiled when it comes to that. Dan, I mean, do you like the ageless wonder? Do you like what Tennessee's got going on?
Well, the good news is, at least for Colts fans going forward, is the AFC South is where Alabama running backs go to die officially. After we had Trent Richardson go down, I'm looking forward to watching my teams in the AFC South with Tennessee having an Alabama running back and a certain Jacksonville Jaguar having a Alabama running back. I'm looking forward to you guys struggling the same way that I struggled with false hope. But having Frank Gore, the ageless wonder, he's coming off of, I think it was his first year, he didn't get 1,000 yards rushing, which isn't surprising for me, but it was surprising for Frank Gore. And they didn't really add that much around him. They added a few guys from the free agency that very few people have heard of. I think it was Robert Turbin and Jordan Todman, a couple of those guys, and then an undrafted rookie by the name of Josh Ferguson, who I'm probably the most optimistic about, of having a high ceiling, which tells you how much I'm looking forward to the Colts running game this year. But it feels like they're taking a step back at the running back position, and they're really banking on, I think it's a 33-year-old Frank Gore to have a healthy season and really carry the load for the running game, and who knows, maybe even third down duties, because there's just nothing behind him on the roster right now. And you know, they had a chance to really upgrade the position by adding a Lamar Miller or even a Chris Ivory. So I was kind of surprised to see them not really even try to make a move to upgrade the running back position. But Tennessee, on the other hand, they made quite the upgrade in both the draft with Derrick Henry and the free agency splash they made with DeMarco Murray. Was that a trade or was that a free agent pickup? You guys know?
Trade, I think.
It was a trade. So
yep.
upgrade.
They double dipped in the running back position, and you know it looks like they're trying to protect their quarterback through the running game. And with what the Colts just went through with Andrew Luck, would have thought they would have tried to make an upgrade at the running game to give him a similar break, but they just didn't do it. So running back's a bit of a question mark in Indianapolis. Tennessee made their moves, and then James Houston made another big move. I've been a big Lamar Miller fan, but it just doesn't appear that he gets the workload in Miami anyway. What do you think about his future in Houston?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, I'm very optimistic about that. I mean, we had a running back named Alfred Blue last year. He came on in 2014 at the end when Arian Foster first got hurt. And, you know, Bill Barnwell wrote up a great piece on even if the Houston Texans had just had an average running back, how much better off they would have been. I'm sorry, not even an average, but a replacement-level running back. Alfred Blue was getting hit behind the line. He was not able to make defenders miss. He didn't have a power move. He didn't have a finesse move. You know, he didn't have anything. And to go from that to Lamar Miller, who is in the same vein as Arian Foster, I'm not going to go ahead and, you know, anoint him as the next Arian Foster right away. Let him get out there and have a, you know, a stretch of, you know, 5, 6, 7 games where he has to touch the ball more than 20 times. But I'm sure anybody out there who's played fantasy is frustrated by his, you know, yards per carry, his productions per touch, because he's also a receiving threat out of the backfield, and him not getting the ball more than 10 to 15 times a game. I'm glad he's here. I'm, you know, much more optimistic about his chances of coming in and having a huge impact than, say, you know, Brock Osweiler breaking Matt Schaub's single-season passing record. But, you know, I think as far as the division goes, and, you know, guys, correct me if you disagree here, I think we have Houston at number one as far as the running back situation goes. Then 2 and 3 are kind of split on the same level between Jacksonville and Tennessee. And then down at the bottom would be Indianapolis with Frank Gore.
What I'll say is I think that's a fair list, but I'm just not sold on pretty much any of them. And I just really wonder, I'll be very curious to see how the year shakes out and what we think at the end of the year as opposed to right now.
I fully suspect that Lamar Miller will get the right usage in Houston, but I'd be curious to see how Tennessee and Jacksonville use their backfields, especially in the passing game, to see if they can make some noise there. And then, yeah, I think Indy's a distant force, only because Frank Gore's coming off his worst year, and there's nothing behind him as a fail-safe if he repeats last year.
Now, I'll jump onto a quick tangent here because it's going to come up over the next several categories. But Indianapolis, for the first year, didn't really go out and make a huge splash in free agency. They appeared to at least have the cap space to do it. Dan, do you think this was because of them trying to get a monster deal for Luck? Or, I mean, is this just kind of a sign of things to come now that you're not getting Luck for, you know, only a couple million? And I believe his salary jumped up to close to $16 million for this year. So now you're finally going to have to see what it's like for the rest of the world to pay a quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, it's about $16 million this year. So I think if they wanted to make a big splash this year, they would have. But I think they're starting to realize that there are a lot more holes to fill on the team than just one or two or three veteran players like they've made in the past. And, you know, it's not necessarily – the right way to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. But when you go from Peyton Manning at 13-3 to, who was it, Curtis Painter or Kerry Collins to 2-4, and get Andrew Luck back, and all of a sudden you're back to 11-5. It's not just the quarterback play that's making that swing. It's a big part of it, but there's going to be some other pieces that are needed. And I think the first 4 years of Andrew Luck's career, he had a GM that thought he could get clever and bring all of his quote-unquote gems over from the Philadelphia Eagles and bring them to a weaker division in the AFC South and fix everything. And then you get into the playoffs and you're getting beat by, you know, significant margins. So I think it's a little twofold. One, that Andrew Luck's going to have this nice fancy contract. And two, they're going to try to take a bigger picture look and see that they have bigger holes to fill along the defense along the offensive line, and as we just discussed, the running back position. And they're going to ask Andrew Luck to mask a lot of those things, but reality is that he's not going to be able to mask, you know, a bad defense. If he's going to be asked to mask a bad defense, he's going to go out and turn the ball over like we saw last year and in a couple of his playoff games early in his career. So I think that's going to be a big part of what they're going to do, not only this year, but going forward, is they're going to try to build a lot more stability within. They're going to try to build the offensive line with the four draft picks they had this year. I would imagine next year they're going to draft a running back, maybe some more secondary or defensive-minded players to kind of create a solid foundation of a team that can be good for the next 4 or 5 years. And, you know, you guys are good at math. You're not going to win the Super Bowl every year, but if you give yourself a good chance, you know, you might get lucky 1 in 4 years, 1 in 5 years. But unfortunately for Indy, the rest of the AFC South appears to be catching up. And I was joking with you guys before the show. I said my favorite thing about the AFC South used to be that everybody was getting a new quarterback every year. And it looks like we're seeing the end of that here in the next few years, potentially.
Well, it's certainly an interesting future for Indy. You know, Irsay is definitely, he seems to be in perpetual win now mode. Shocking that a person with his particular impulse control would think that they should go out and win it every year or sign big free agents, but I digress. So Ryan, next up is the wide receivers, and I'm just going to let you have the floor with your two men named Allen.
I mean, it's so exciting just to have this position group locked up and full of guys that make plays. It's just the two Allens have been incredible. It's like we were searching for years and years since Jimmy Smith left to find a number one receiver, and now we got it in Allen Robinson, who just jumps so high and makes crazy combated catches. Just he'll jump up and snatch the ball out of the air, and then Allen Hurns, undrafted, has made plays day one, and he got himself rewarded with a new contract this year. So Hurns is a personal favorite of mine, even though I recognize that Robinson is a better player and he's the number one. And as the full core, you know, it sounds like, especially since he threw to me, that we can agree that the Jags have the best in the division. When you got the two Allens, you have the Mr. Potential but never there, Marquise Lee, and then Rashad Green, who made some nice plays last year, and he's a great is a strong word. He showed some flashes as a punt returner, and it seems like he has that position locked up, and he's going to be the slot guy. So as a core, they just, you know, provide a lot of different options for Blake Bortles, and they go deep. That's what, you know, Bortles is an exciting quarterback because he throws deep, but also Robinson and Hurns and even Marquise Lee are guys that have the potential to go deep on basically any play, and they've made so many chunk plays last year. You know, I don't have any stats, but a ton of them. I expect to see more of that in the future. As far as number two in the division, although maybe you have the best wide receiver, it's kind of tough, but I mean, I would probably say the Texans come next just because of one guy. And do you think Hopkins is better than Robinson, or what do you think, James?
So I'm glad you pitched it in this way, because I will definitely agree that as far as the wide receiving core, Jacksonville is number one. And I'm sure Dan is going to have an opinion here for T.Y. Hilton, but I do believe that DeAndre Hopkins is the best receiver in the division. And I shouldn't have to say much more than he had Brian Hoyer throwing to him and only him. Every defense knew that the ball was going to DeAndre Hopkins last year, because what were they going to do? Run it with Alfred Blue? No. What were they going to do? Throw it to Nate Washington or Cecil Shorts III? Well, no. And even sometimes when they gave it to Cecil Shorts III, Cecil threw it to DeAndre Hopkins. So, I mean, to call the Houston Texans offense one-dimensional last year is maybe giving it a bit too much credit. Despite that, he still dominated the league. He had flashy catches every week, which I know isn't necessarily the note of a great wide receiver. But ever since he came in, we've basically had a painless transition away from Andre Johnson, who was our franchise wide receiver and possibly just, you know, overall face of the franchise. And I don't want to say that he's forgotten, that that'll never be the case, but it made him going to a division rival not painful. In the draft we've added, Will Fuller out of Notre Dame, and we added Braxton Miller. Braxton Miller is obviously a more of a raw talent. Will Fuller isn't exactly polished either. But we're looking for literally anybody else who can take just a little bit of attention away from DeAndre Hopkins, or, you know, give Brock an option to throw. I mean, we gave him Lamar Miller out of the backfield, obviously not a wide receiver. He's got DeAndre Hopkins on the side. Once the defense has to account for those two players, you got to believe that there's going to be some open space for our two rookies. But Dan, you've been respectfully quiet, but I'm sure biding your time to tell us on how T.Y. Hilton is really the best in the division.
Well, fortunately, I have a mute button on my phone, and I made some pretty good use of that. But no, I'm not going to dispute. Hopkins is hands down the best receiver in the division. The only complaint I have about him being the best receiver in the division was a particular play where fumble. Maybe 5 yards of him they didn't go after, but I'm not going to kill the guy over it. He makes incredible catches time after time, and as James mentioned, he was the only option on the offense of a winning team in the National Football League, and still put up some pretty solid numbers. But looking at a receiving group in its entirety, I would have to say that T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief would get the slight edge in my book. I think the two of them, I would take the two of them over the one in Houston. I think that the combination of two guys with speed and then the size of Dante Moncrief would give me a slight edge over the size and abilities of one receiver and DeAndre Hopkins. I'm excited about what Houston's added for their sake. They added a couple of speed guys, and Bill O'Brien's big thing going into the offseason was that they were going to add speed. But if James, maybe you know about this, but I heard a rumor this season that the Texans were trying to actually trade up to acquire Philip Dorsett in last year's NFL draft, and that's a piece that we haven't really seen how Indy's even going to use yet, and he's going to be their third option in the passing game, and I'm hoping that he can complement T.Y. in the deep game and kind of keep defenses off balance, you know, send one of them deep, send them both deep, and see how defenses really respond to that speed. As defenses were getting bigger and stronger, Indy was adding these smaller, faster guys with Hilton and Dorsett, and then they added another speed guy with Moncrief. So the Indy receivers have the speed down for sure, and it looks like the Texans are mirroring that while the Jaguars are just adding playmakers. But when we look over to Tennessee, I really don't know who their number one option is going to be. Do you guys?
I decided to look at the depth chart prior to starting this up, and right now it's either going to be Kendall Wright on the right-hand side, or it's going to be Harry Douglas on the left, or they have Rishard Matthews out of the slot. And, you know, it's a lot of, I don't want to say similarly talented players, but there are a lot of, like Harry Douglas and Rishard Matthews, I feel definitely benefited from playing on teams with, better receivers. Douglas in the case of Roddy White and Julio Jones. And then Rishard Matthews was a sneaky good, borderline good player last year for an otherwise forgettable Miami team. What Miami team is not forgettable? So while I think that I don't think that Kendall Wright is a true number one receiver. So, by default, that puts Tennessee number four in my books. But I don't think they're so far behind with like these three wide receivers if they can find a way to integrate all three of them. So they may not have a true number one, but they have a set of number two or number three receivers.
In my book, they're a clear cut last place. And I think it's an interesting argument, possibly. I'd like to hear of what someone would want of the Colts versus the Texans, where basically you get, do you want a full core that's pretty good or really good even? I don't know, with Moncrief and Hilton. Or would you want one guy who's awesome in Hopkins and then some other guys where you don't know what you're going to get? But Tennessee, I mean, Kendall Wright is in his fifth year, and he hasn't reached whatever potential they thought he had. Justin Hunter, Rishard Matthews, I'm glad you pointed him out because he was good for Miami, but he's not a guy who's going to turn anything around for Tennessee. Harry Douglas is in his ninth year. I wouldn't expect too much out of him anymore. I basically imagine that Tennessee wants Dorial Green Beckham to be a number one receiver, but he has so many questions and who knows what his potential actually is. So for me, I feel like Tennessee is a pretty clear cut number four for the wide receivers.
Yeah, but in contrast to the running back being a position of weakness in the AFC South, I think that wide receiver is definitely one of the positions of strength in the AFC South. Between the Jaguars, Texans, and Colts, I think you put that position together and you got a pretty scary group of receivers, not only that can catch the ball, but can make plays after the catch too.
That covers the majority of the skill positions. But moving on to tight end, who wants to make the case for Tennessee having the strongest tight end position, possibly the strongest? This may possibly be the only best position that the Titans have in the entire division.
Yeah, I think that you nailed that. This is their only position of strength with Delanie Walker, a guy that can both block and catch the ball. He can be Mariota's best friend if Mariota will let him be. They brought in two running backs to run the ball, but he can block for them. They can run the play action and hit Delanie Walker out of the backfield. And I think that he's going to be the perfect complement for Marcus to really get the ground game going. And then,
I know that you lost one of your tight ends down to New Orleans. How do you think that's going to impact you, Dan?
Well, the good news is that we won't be throwing the ball to a wide open tight end in the end zone and watching them drop it. But Kobe Fleener was what they termed the pass catching tight end. It's kind of interesting that they called him that, because I can't tell you how many times that guy dropped a pass that no one was even around him, and he started looking down the field, and next thing you know, the ball's on the ground. So losing him wasn't, to me, a big deal at all, because he didn't fill his role. Signing Dwayne Allen was a big surprise to me, because he was the guy that I wanted all along. And similar to Delanie Walker, he offers the run blocking and some pass catching abilities. We haven't really seen how much he can do in the passing game because he's been asked to stay back and block for so long that protecting Andrew Luck's been a big priority. So keeping him in the block's been his calling. I think he had 26 targets last year. So this year they've promised him through his contract numbers that they're going to get him involved more in the passing game and to allow him to make a bigger impact in the offense. But I don't know if I believe it until I see it type thing, and I'm really looking forward to it. And then they have another little-known guy his name's Jack Doyle. He plays a lot in the backfield, but he'll come out into some two tight ends sets, and he might have led the tight ends in touchdowns last year, to tell you the truth. Just little gimmick plays out of the backfield where no one covered him, and he got it in the end zone. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Dwayne Allen can finally do. And He was tough for me to rank second just because we haven't seen what he can do. I ranked him second based on his all-around ability, but I gave Julius Thomas some serious considerations at number two, but ultimately I ranked him third in the division. What do you think about that, Ryan?
I still think Julius Thomas should get serious consideration for number one, but I know in all honesty, and I know he's on my team, but I do think he's the most talented, and I mean, they showed it with that huge contract and everything like that. I think he basically, to me, he should be the best tight end in this division, but last year he just never, ever quite looked comfortable to me, and he was hurt at the beginning of the year, and kind of coming back. So I don't know if it was that or just not completely comfortable in the offense. He made plays every now and then. Sometimes Bortles, even in games, I felt like forced it to him because he's such a big target, and he had those great years with the Broncos, and I know he had Peyton Manning, but I would be very interested to see how he does in year two because, I don't like speaking nicely about any Titan, but Delanie Walker certainly gets my respect. He's done really well, and on some bad teams, he's been the best go-to receiver out of receivers or tight ends, and he makes plays and he's tough. So I'm fine with him being number one. Dwayne Allen's pretty solid too. But I think if all of these tight ends played up to their fullest best potential, I think number one is still Julius Thomas, in my opinion. James, I don't know who you think is number one. And also, how is your tight end situation shaking up there for Houston?
Well, I would be impressed if either of you could name a tight end on the Houston Texans right now.
I actually drafted one in the league, so I can cheat and name one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's unfortunate for me. But, I mean, I think you were right on point there, Ryan. If everybody lived up potential, I think Julius Thomas and Delanie Walker would be clear number one. I think Dwayne Allen also has a potential of being maybe not right up at their level, but not exactly far behind. I would have to give the slight edge to Julius Thomas just because we've seen him do it before. But if there was ever a case for karma, you kind of saw the decline of Julius Thomas in that game when he was with the Broncos where the NFL mic picked him up scoring a touchdown just yelling, "This is so easy," as he ran in, I think, like the second touchdown of the game. It became a lot less easy for him once he moved to Jacksonville. But I think he's going to have a nice bounce back season. Texans, hey, we can only go up as far as tight end goes. I don't have high hopes for it. I think we're more focused on the blocking aspect for the tight end, and trying to go from there. So I won't dwell too long on the tight ends of my Houston Texans. I will just say we are a distant fourth, possibly even fifth in the division. What I will talk about is the offensive line, though. The past several seasons, I think it was safe to rank Houston as the number one offensive line, purely from a lack of competition. Tennessee has been kind of a shambles. We mentioned earlier that Jacksonville's been letting up a lot of sacks on Bortles. And, even Dan mentioned that a big chunk of the reason why Andrew Luck was so ineffective and ultimately hurt last year was just the porous offensive line. Houston has been graded above average on their offensive line. I think that's one of the reasons why Brian Hoyer didn't look as bad as he could have all season. And the playoff game definitely exposed the flaws of the offensive line and the flaws of Brian Hoyer. But that's what happens when you play against, Tamba Hali and Justin Houston. They're going to make a lot of people look very silly. We did lose our center, but we have a new one in the draft and with a new quarterback. I think that we're going to be all right on offensive line. O'Brien has basically rebuilt the offensive line two or three times or every year for the past two or three years. And, at this point, I hate to sound like Jay or Patrick, but I got to go with In Bill We Trust as far as making this offensive line gel before the start of the season. So what about you, Ryan? How does your offensive line look?
Well, I know we were trying to speed stuff up, so I can certainly speed up, talk about the Jags offensive line. I feel like any criticism toward them is fair. And a lot of the guys I like simply just because it's my team, but I recognize their body of work is not really that great. So the only one I'll mention is Brandon Linder. He looks like he could be a Pro Bowl player maybe every year, that kind of level, maybe even All-Pro, like he's talked about being that good, but they're switching his position most likely from guard to center, so we'll see how that switch goes. As far as anybody else, it's all wait and see. Luke Jokel has an actual competition behind him this year with a guy we signed and, from the Steelers, Beecham. So we'll see how the line shakes out, and we got to see how they play. I definitely couldn't put them in the running for best O-line in the division. How about you, Dan?
I'm actually watching American Ninja Warrior, and I think I just found our next right guard. So things are not looking good in Indianapolis. They drafted four new linemen, and they claim that they're just doing it for depth, but I don't know. It's a mess. We hired a former head coach, Joe Philbin, to be our offensive line coach, so hopefully he can make something out of that offensive line. That, I mean, they're literally just throwing numbers at it now. It's a numbers game to them to hope that they can put an offensive line out there that can protect Andrew Luck and mask a running game of some sort. So it's a mess in Indianapolis. So I think they're the clear-cut fourth in the division. I don't know too much about the Tennessee Titans offensive line. I know they have a couple of younger guys. They drafted a tackle. They had a decent left tackle. So isn't their new rookie tackle, isn't he going to get played at right tackle? Is that right?
Yeah, that's so, right.
Probably. I was going to say, I know a little bit more about the Tennessee offense. Yeah, the Tennessee offensive line is definitely a work in progress, but it's trending in the right direction. They're going to be starting three former first-round picks. Jack Conklin, their first-round pick this year, is going to probably switch over to the right-hand side, again, because they have a decent left tackle already. But they drafted five linemen, I believe, so one more than you, Dan. And
that's impressive.
They're all in on protecting. Yeah, they're all in on protecting Mariota, but I think they're still at least a year away from, having that gel, having that click. And so, I'll place them third only because Indy's in the division, but I think Tennessee would be a solid contender for fourth in any other division.
So do you guys think that Tennessee's overreacting to Marcus's injury? I mean, they brought in two new running backs, drafted essentially a whole new offensive line. Or do you think they're doing the right thing in protecting their franchise?
I think they're doing the wrong thing in keeping Mike Mularkey and emphasizing running the football like crazy. So I think that's what it's about. It's all about blocking for the run and doing whatever Mularkey wants. I don't know. But, they can keep Marcus protected, but it looks like they're focused on running, really.
Yeah, right. I think you hit that one spot on. They're loading up front to try and have this ground and pound game that, it's worked so well for Jeff Fisher, I guess is the argument. So,
yeah.
But I think it's just a byproduct of we want to run the ball. We also have this franchise quarterback. We can sell putting all of these picks into the offensive line because we also have approximately 1,000 picks over the next 2 years thanks to, look, it's Jeff Fisher making a second appearance in this sentence. It's going to be a mess. I'll take advantage. Again, J.J. Watt, looking forward. I'd say he has those two dates circled. He loves divisional games right now. So, speaking of J.J. Watt, we go from the offensive line. Let's go to the defensive line. Ryan, you're going to get your first-round pick from last year back this year, I believe. Does that put you kind of in the same contention for the number two defensive line overall? I think we're kind of in an Andrew Luck situation with defensive line where it's Houston and then everybody else.
Yeah, that's probably fair, especially when you have a guy like J.J. Watt. But I definitely feel strongly about the D-line. We missed a lot of guys last year, and not only, like you said, missing our first-round pick who gets to come back, and hopefully Fowler makes the impact that we think he will. But Sendarik Marks had a Pro Bowl season in 2014 and then had his I think it was a torn ACL or whatever in week 17. And so he missed most of last year, and he was kind of coming on, but it's just a strong rotation of a bunch of guys. And obviously we signed Malik Jackson in the off season, who was number one free agent on a lot of lists. And I like that signing because he's a young ascending guy rather than an old guy. So anyway, Malik Jackson, Cedric Marks, Dante Fowler, we'll see how that goes. But Roy Miller has been solid there. And then he never lived up to the potential, but a first-round pick years ago, Tyson Alualu. And it's just, they have a Jared Audrick. There's a lot of depth there. So they're deep. We don't have a J.J. Watt. Who knows what Fowler will turn out to be. So I would definitely say, if nothing else, we're number two. And I just, I think it's a position of strength on the entire Jaguar team. Third, I'm not really sure, but I, Dan, has Indy done anything with their D line?
Well, Ryan, you may be getting your first round pick back, but Indy should be getting their third round pick back in Henry Anderson. And Henry Anderson is a very interesting prospect, because last year during the Colts season, when he was playing before he tore his ACL, the defense looked formidable. He was able to give him a decent pass rush playing from the defensive end spot of their 3-4, which, is I'm sure we'll get to, is going to be a major concern for Indianapolis this year. And he might not be ready for week one, but the impact that he made, I think PFF had him as one of their top, I want to say top 10 defensive linemen last year before he got hurt. So I think he gives that defense a huge, huge, huge boost that will be really needed this year. Nose tackle, I don't know if they really have an answer there quite yet. That'll be the next piece that they need to add to really make a difference in, especially the run defense that has plagued them for so many years. And I don't know if they have anyone on the roster for that quite yet. But then they have Arthur Jones is coming back from injury. I'm not really counting too much on him. He's been injured quite a few years, but he like Henry Anderson, he's made a huge impact when he's in, and it's just a matter of health really for Indianapolis. And I think if they can get a defensive line unit together for a season, that they'll be an easy third for the division. I don't know too much about the Titans defensive line. Are projected to finish fourth in the division. I just don't pay too much attention to him.
I know Jarrell Casey's like a really good player. As far as anybody else, I'm not too high up, or I'm not really brushed up on their whole D line. I know they got somebody in the draft and stuff. James, you know anything about their D line? Third, fourth? What do you think?
I mean, I'll put them a fourth option, just because, again, I don't know a lot about them. I'm not scared of them. Tennessee has done the right thing by creating an artificial market for that number one overall pick, so that they were able to cash in on a bunch of draft picks. And so I think they took a lot of steps to try and address offense and their offensive line this year. It's really hard to fix both a bad offense and a bad defense in one off season. So I think it's pretty safe to pencil them in at number four. So that leaves us up next. Anybody want to make a strong case for either linebackers or secondary, and how you guys are just going to dominate at that particular position?
Dominate's too strong a word.
I was going to say a resounding silence. Can we go for be above average on either of those positions? Or how about this? Ryan, you had the big cornerback pick, and for the second year in a row, you've gotten bit by the training bug training camp bug. I mean, are you going to get Jalen Ramsey back at all this season? Is he going to be coming back next year, you know, a la Dexter Fowler? And how big of an impact is that for you?
Yeah, apparently he's already kind of recovering, and I don't remember if it was today, but it looks like he's already running again. He's definitely on track to play this season. So it looked really dire when it happened, and it was like, oh no, it's happening again, but that's not the case. So I feel pretty strong about the secondary finally, but again, dominate is too strong a word. Really deep at the corner position, even without drafting Jalen Ramsey, who's hopefully this kind of otherworldly talent, you know, he was kind of projected to be, so we'll see as far as that goes. But Devon House had a nice season. Aaron Colvin's a good player, but it's going to be a weird struggle because he's suspended for the first four games. And we also signed Prince Amukamara. And it's deep. It's a much deeper position. There's a couple other guys who maybe aren't even worth mentioning, but they've started plenty of games, and they could go in certainly for a game or two, and we could be okay. The main thing is, besides Ramsey, we signed Tashaun Gibson, and we haven't had a free safety worth anything in a long time. And he's going to be able to allow Jonathan Cyprian, who's a strong safety, to finally play to his strengths, because Cyprian hasn't been as good as we thought he would be. But now with Tashaun Gibson signed from the Browns, he's going to allow Cyprian to play closer to the line. And I just think the secondary will certainly look a lot better this year. So above average, I put my stamp on that. Dominate will have to wait maybe till Ramsey's second or third year. I don't know.
What about yourself, Dan? How do you think your linebackers and secondary are going to stack up relative to the division?
Well, I think I'm safely younger than every linebacker that the Colts are going to start this year, if that tells you anything. And I don't think there's a single pass rushing linebacker that is under contract in 2017. So got Robert Mathis is old, Trent Cole's old, Eric Walden's old, Quell Jackson's old. So I don't know what to think. I just hope that they piece it together well enough that they can make plays when their number's called. Secondary, they have a decent secondary. Fonte Davis didn't have a great year last year. It was a good year, not a great year. They added Patrick Robinson in free agency to play opposite him, and he's been a slot corner most of his career, so they're going to ask him to step up and replace Greg Toler, who, by the way, I think any of us three could replace Greg Toler, and maybe even our friend in Tennessee that doesn't know where the podcast is today could replace him and find a receiver to cover better than Toler did. But the big question mark is going to be Clayton Gathers, who is from the same university, I think, as Cyprian. So he's going to come in and fill a need for Indianapolis' safeties. He'll play alongside Mike Adams. And Indianapolis doesn't really employ free safety and strong safety. They just name it a safety. So between the two of them, I think Mike Adams is going to be perfect to coach up Clayton and get him up to speed and hopefully get him in the right position, because I don't know if Mike Adams is going to be around much longer either. So we're going to see a lot of turnover in that position for Indianapolis the next couple of years. And I can't say that's a bad thing.
Just like a general question or note or something about the Colts, because how often, I don't know how many times you've heard it, James, but every time Dan's talking, it seems he keeps mentioning old, and old means slow, and it's been on many positions for the Colts. So I wonder if we're heading into some kind of sneaky bad year again for the Colts. And at the same time, a lot of people are expecting Andrew Luck to bounce back. And if they go 12-4, like, am I going to be shocked? No. But maybe it's going to be tougher for the Colts than I thought this year. It sounds like every position there's old or just not very strong or something.
I think it's correctly termed older.
Well, that is a great segue, Ryan. I will forego talk of my linebackers and secondary. Not a whole lot has changed 1 year to the next. We replaced Raheem Moore, which similar to Dan's situation, any of us could have replaced him. Let's get to what each of us think as far as the wins we're going to do, or wins each team is going to get this year. Just as a quick reminder, the AFC South plays against the AFC West this year, which is, clearly a very strong division. We're also going to play against the NFC North, which I think has huge potential to take a step back or just kind of stay mediocre.
And then obviously we have our division games. And then we play the AFC North same place finisher. So, and then we also play the AFC East same place finisher. So I'll get to see the Patriots yet again. Oh joy. But we also have the I've got the Vegas line as of beginning of June. We're going to go alphabetically. And as we talked about before on the podcast, it's amazing with the AFC South. Houston, Indy, Jacksonville, all right in a row alphabetically. And then Tennessee way down in the bottom where they belong. So starting off with Houston, over under 8.5 wins, I'm going to take not only the over, I'm saying we're going to defend as AFC South champions. You guys begin your discussion.
Just for Houston?
Oh, yeah, just for Houston, sorry. Do you think over or under 8.5?
Well, being born and raised in Vegas, I feel like they've done an excellent job with this number as usual, and I wouldn't put a cent on either over or under for the Texans because I feel like that's the perfect number. I feel like if I really, really had to put myself out there and go one way or the other, I would say over because I feel like it's a strong chance that they will repeat as division champs, but having a new quarterback, it's certainly not a given, but the whole division is kind of, it's all over the place. But as strong as the defense has been, and, you know, maybe Lamar Miller is good for the team, and you still have Hopkins and theoretically a better quarterback. So if I had to choose one way or the other, I would probably say over.
I'm with Ryan. It's a pretty tough call. It's a good number. It's tough because, like you said, you got a new quarterback, a new running back. So essentially, you get a whole new offense with that look, and it's going to be pretty tough to get to 8 wins. Especially as the defending AFC South champion, you get a little tougher schedule theoretically than the rest of the division. So if I had to bet, I would take the under and tell them there's no way that they can repeat as AFC South champions.
Okay. So, you know, that segues nicely into Indianapolis. Their over-under is at 9.5 wins. Dan, why don't you kick us off?
You know, James, you were talking about this in our Slack group, and when I first heard you say 9.5, I looked at 2015 and I said, they were 8-8 with Matt Hasselbeck playing quarterback, Andrew Luck going, I think it was 1-3, 2-3 maybe. And they won a game with Josh Freeman starting at quarterback, and they only have him at 9.5 games. And then I went through their schedule just before this podcast, and I counted it up, and I got to 9-7. And I was shocked. I was like, there's no way they can only get nine wins. But I don't know. I haven't pegged at 9-7, so I want to say the under, but I can't do it because they're my team, you know? So I'm going to go with the over. I'm going to say that they're going to be 10-6, and that should be good enough to win the division in the AFC South this year.
Okay. Ryan, what do you think?
Kind of tough call again, but I'm just going to go with my general feeling of what I've heard this entire podcast, and I'm just going to go with under, especially if I had to actually put some money down. That is where I would have to put it. It sounds like it's going to be all up to Andrew Luck and the receivers, which is a great group. And they drafted that center, I think, and maybe their line plays better. So maybe all offense is going to be fine. But I'm just going to go with the under.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the under as well. I saw 9.5, and I immediately thought under. Going back to the Slack group conversation, I went so far as to float the idea of the Indianapolis Colts finishing third in this division. You know, the schedule is tough on everybody this year. I mean, it's tough every year, but I think 9.5 is way too high. You know, I will say 7-9 for them. They're going to go 4-2 in the division, and then outside the division, and it's looking kind of bleak. So I know Dan disagrees with that, but I don't think we're going to find any middle ground on this one. Sorry, Dan. But Ryan, Jacksonville Jaguars, they have you at 7.5 wins. What are you thinking?
Well, I think, unfortunately, a smart way to go, if you had to do money, people might want to do the under version. But with 7.5, I'm going over because I think 8 wins is about right. I hope for more. But it's been a while since we've even had a 500 season, and the team is going to be improved. But as you said, we play the AFC West, we play the NFC North, and then the division games, you know, even whoever ends up being the best team and whoever ends up being the worst team, you know, most likely Tennessee. We still had close games with Tennessee the past few years, and I think Tennessee even beat us once last year, so I'm going to go over. I'm hoping for 16, but I think 8 sounds about right.
Is that including preseason?
8 sounds about right.
The 16, yeah. The 8, no, regular season.
Dan, how about you? Over, under 7.5?
Man, this is tough because I really like the offensive stability that Jacksonville's been given. And if anything, they got an upgrade bringing in Chris Ivory, but looking at the AFC West, it pains me to say, Ryan, but I think I got to take the under. I think they go 7-9.
Oh.
Well, so, Ryan, if it makes you feel any better, the money is actually on them going over right now. I withheld this a little bit. It's not a straight 50-50 proposition. To go over 7.5 wins, you have to lay a little bit of odds. It's at -130 for those that know money line betting, whereas the 7,
right,
the under will get you even. Yeah, whereas the under will get you even money. I think if they were both even money, I'd be tempted to take the over, but getting the even money on the under, I gotta go under and put them right at 7-9 for this season. But
there's a lot of buzz, which is nice, you know.
Oh yeah, but buzz is nice. Unfortunately, it doesn't translate much to the standings. Mm-hmm. But based on our conversation right here, I'm guessing that we're thinking 9 wins is going to win this division again this year. Is there any dissension in that? Do you think? I think unlike last year, these three teams, it's going to be like, you know, 7-9, 8-8, and 9-7 is going to be kind of how it goes. That there's going to be these three all within about a game or two of each other. Make the last 2 weeks pretty interesting, and then we'll get to Tennessee here in a minute.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. What I find interesting is, James, you told me that the Colts would be 4-2 in the division. I'm curious to know, do you think that most of the teams are going to be 4-2 and then we'll have Tennessee come in at 0-6?
Well, I don't think that's going to be the case. Tennessee's going to get one division win. I don't know against who, but that's just the way divisional football works. You know, you're not going to be able to – we like to joke about how there's such a huge talent gap between these teams, but at the end of the day, there's not as much separating them as we like to let on. And so, you know, one guy goes out there and has a great – you know, one team goes out and has a great game, makes that their Super Bowl, and, you know, there's really nothing that the other team is going to do to – you know, stop them if they come out flat, especially if they've had, you know, you come off of a couple AFC West games and you go right into a division game, you might come out a little flat.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but when I looked at all three of these teams, I had them all at, you know, 4-2, where I had these guys winning their home head-to-head, losing their away head-to-head, and I projected them all to be Tennessee, and I don't necessarily think that's how it's going to work out, but just to play devil's advocate, I think that's where I thought we all were with the way this division would play out. So that's why I asked the question.
Ryan, do you have anything to – how many division wins do you think Tennessee gets?
Hopefully, is there a negative possibility? That would be nice.
Well,
I don't like them if
finally,
you can't tell.
Well, I finally managed to scroll down to where Tennessee Titans are on this list of over-under wins. They are not the worst. They're at over under 5.5 wins, which is the same as San Francisco, and one better than the Cleveland Browns, who bring up the rear at over under 4.5. You get Vegas believes in the over. They're putting it at a minus 140 for the over and a plus 110 for the under. Give me the under.
I mean, yeah, I'm taking the under. Really, for me, it's the malarkey factor. And I could see why people would get excited about this team because of the potential that's there. And who knows what happens with the running game, and who knows how good Mariota turns out to be next year. But I feel fine with taking the under.
I'll take the under all day.
Dan? All right. For one more parting shot at Jeff Fisher, I think there's a distinct possibility with the Rams' number one overall pick, or that foreshadowing there, with the Rams' first-round pick next year and Tennessee, it's very likely that Tennessee might have two of the top three picks in the draft.
I'm okay with that.
So, yeah, so real quick, before we wrap up here, we've got Super Bowl odds. I mean, I know all of us are going to want to say, our team has a shot. I will guarantee that the word Houston will feature prominently in the Super Bowl, if only because it's being played there. But going through the ranks really quick, 33-1 for the Houston Texans to win the Super Bowl, 20-1 for the Indianapolis Colts, 50-1 for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they're not quite Leicester City, but 100-1 for the Tennessee Titans. Anybody want to? I mean, honestly, though, I mean, 50-1, it's a long shot, Ryan. But with as much buzz around the team, is that worth a $5, $10 investment for you?
Here's my take on the whole division. If Houston gets in the playoffs, I feel like they are not going to win a game, or maybe they win one game, right? Indy, with Andrew Luck, I'll give them a shot in the dark at a Super Bowl. But in all honesty, and it's nice to see the Jags at 50-1 for once instead of 250-1 or whatever they have been, I think it is worth throwing $5 down, because if we're thinking the division's going to be that close and the Jaguars get into the playoffs, they have the explosive offense, and what they've really worked on the entire offseason is the defense and revamping everything. I didn't even talk about Miles Jack earlier with the linebackers. I feel like there's a chance the defense takes a huge step, and when you have a defense with Blake Bortles and the explosive offense, I would give it $5 that they put everything together and could, you know, make a run. Obviously, everything's got to go right, but I could certainly see that as not the craziest thing happening this year, and that's all I have to say about that.
Dan, how about you?
It's crazy that it's that quote-unquote bad of odds for them to win the Super Bowl. You know, they're not even necessarily favored to win 9 games, so it's a little risky for me. I probably won't make that bet at 20-1 odds. Like you said, anybody can get hot, and you have a quarterback that can make plays. You got a chance, so they have a chance, but I think at 20-1, I'll stay out of that bet.
I think for me, the 33, I mean, that's right in the wheelhouse of I think it kind of buys high on Brock Osweiler. A lot would have to go right for that to happen. I mean, if the defense continues its tear, though, the defense can keep us in the games. I mean, I'm not going to put any sizable wager on it, but, you know, I'll put a little bit of fun money on the 33-1. Now, just before we wrap up, we've been doing the Game of Thrones analogy for each team. For the AFC South, I almost went very lazily and just said that we were just pick any four characters from Dorne. Nobody really cares. They kind of show up every once in a while but are quickly dismissed and not really integral to the plot. This is my division, though, so I couldn't be that lazy. So we'll go alphabetical order. For Houston, I picked Euron Greyjoy. And so for those who have only picked it up this season or prior to this season, he is the guy who's going to come in and is the new king of the Iron Islands. He took over for Balon Greyjoy and definitely admitted that he killed his brother to, you know, take over the division. I feel last year that has a good parallel in how we finally were able to win in Indy, take down kind of the old graying vestiges of the division. And now, you know, we're definitely crazy. We don't, you know, nobody really knows if Euron is a skilled military leader. He keeps claiming he has all of this experience, but he's new to the party. He's got a seat at the table, and well, he's got a shot, and that's damning with faint praise. Do you guys have any better suggestions?
Well, real quick, don't spoil the latest episode because I haven't watched it yet.
Everybody dies.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so next we're going to go to Indianapolis. This is one of the more major characters. It's Daenerys Targaryen. You know, we keep being told that she's relevant to the plot. She's way off in outside of Westeros. She's constantly has excuses as to why she just hasn't lived up to her potential. You know, she has to free the slaves. Now she has to, the dragons aren't quite ready. Oh, you know, I still have to build an army. Now I need some ships. Like, the time just keeps ticking along. So she's, you know, already lost a full season, if not more, just kind of screwing around over in the east there. And, you know, she scores hollow victories over minor opponents, a.k.a. winning AFC South after AFC South, even throwing the, you know, AFC Championship participation banner up there every once in a while. She has a few truly loyal people to her cause, but the vast majority of her support just comes from mercenaries and hired guns. And with the way that Indy usually goes after free agents, I feel that is a very apt comparison.
So just to clarify, she's the beautiful one, right?
That is the one thing going for her, we will say, yes.
All right, so we'll go ahead and hang that as a participation trophy, and we'll go ahead with the next one now.
All right. So, Ryan, this brings up your team, and it's going to be Sansa Stark. She looked to have a nice, promising future way back in season one. She was going to be the queen. It was going to be great. Then she got abused by Joffrey. Then she got abused by Ramsay. Now, though, you know, maybe she finally has learned from all that. She's taken her licks. She's becoming much more aggressive, and it may turn out really well for her. Or then again, you know, she may have to just take another loss. Based on your reaction, I'm guessing you have some opinion on this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, give me a break. I'm just not a fan of her as a character. Can I throw one out there?
Absolutely.
Who is it? Bran? Is it Bron? Who's the one who got his legs broken?
That would be Bran.
Bran. Jags are Bran. They're totally Bran. Listen, he got his legs broken. He's crippled. He can't do much. He's got to get carried along. Hasn't really been relevant. Needs a ton of help and just is kind of useless. But he's waiting in the wings, and he's going to do something special. They're building something up for this guy, and suddenly he's just going to be the most powerful one in the whole freaking, you know, Game of Thrones universe. So the Jags are waiting. They've been building, and they're just ready to come out with whatever they're working, whatever's working with Bran. Because he's going to be really strong. And we've been waiting for it. He's been a crippled, you know, helpless, you know, 2-14 team, but he's going to be coming on strong soon.
I would love to see Bran run a deep pattern for Blake Bortles. That leaves Tennessee. And yeah, it's going to be the butt of another joke because that's what we're going to do here. Most people are going to ask who. It's Doran Martell. He appeared in, I think, one, maybe two episodes of the entire show. He's the former ruler of Dorne. He's not even the cool Prince Oberon who came over and was a little too flashy when he battled the mountain. He's not interesting. Everything he does occurs in a far-off land that seems more like a boondoggle than anything even remotely related to what's going on in the rest of the realm. You know, he's hated for his inaction by those around him. You know, namely the Sand Snakes, and for not getting more involved in what's going on in the world. The rest of the world just ignores him. I feel that's rather fitting for the Tennessee Titans.
Love it.
All right.
I want to see Brand Stark catching deep routes from Blake Bortles. That might be one of the funniest things ever said on this podcast. And considering the competition James has when it comes to Neil and Patrick and Tim from the Falcons, it's that was pretty good. I laughed out loud when I heard that line. All right. So here come my predictions for the AFC South. And I'm actually a lot higher on this division than the actual super fans are. And maybe I might be wrong. We'll have to wait and see. But I really like the moves that the Jaguars have made. I think they're going to improve quite a bit. But let's start with the Tennessee Titans. And Tennessee has made a lot of moves. It's almost like shuffling the chairs on the deck of the Titanic. I don't know if they've made enough of the right moves. That and their schedule is ridiculously tough. They start with Minnesota, Detroit, Oakland, the Texans, the Dolphins, and the Browns. Out of that group, I see only one win, maybe two. But I've in my preseason predictions, I'm only giving them credit for one win in that first group of games, and that's to the Cleveland Browns. I see another hard season for the Titans coming, finishing it up at 3-13. Next up, the Jaguars were 5-11 last year. I really like the moves that they've made. I felt all along last year that they were really that team that was right on the precipice, but just not ready to move over it. I feel this year they're not quite going to push it all the way, but they're going to make another baby step forward. I see a winning season for the Jacksonville Jaguars at 9-7. They will be second in this division. That's right. The Colts, who finished 8-8, much of their chagrin last season was based on the fact that Andrew Luck couldn't stay healthy. The thing was, is Andrew Luck wasn't all that successful when he was healthy. But was it because of some of the problems he was dealing with in terms of recovering from injury, or was it Andrew Luck was sort of regressing a little bit? I don't know, but I don't trust the Colts that much coming into the season, and I don't really like their schedule all that much for them either. I've got them at 6-10. They will be the third place team in this division. And that leaves us with the Texans at 9-7. The moves the Texans made at the end of the season last year. Remember, they had some pretty hard defensive struggles early in the season, but something clicked and they turned it around in the second half of last season. I don't think they're going to have that struggle to start with. I do see some tough games for them. I see them with a loss to Kansas City in week two. However, I do see them with a win against my Patriots in week three. And that's going to be, I think, a key for them, because then they'll go on a nice little winning streak from what I can see. Now, while I am down on Denver, and I'll certainly get into the AFC West a little bit later on another podcast, I do have them losing to Denver and losing to Oakland. And then they do have another couple difficult games in the last third of their season. But I see the Texans at 11-5. And in my book, that has them as the third seed in the AFC going into the playoffs. Now, I will get into my postseason predictions on another podcast after all the division previews are finished. But that's how I see the AFC South, with the Texans coming out on top at 11-5, the Jaguars in second at 9-7, just missing the playoffs, the Colts 6-10, and the Titans 3-13. They will be in contention for that first pick in the draft. Although, as you know, I have the Cleveland Browns ranked a little bit lower. And if you don't know that, you can obviously go back and check out our archives either on iTunes or on the AHA Radio app, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere where fine podcasts are heard. You can find the Next Fan Up podcast and you can subscribe. We're always at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Send us your comments, your suggestions, your jokes. NextFanUp@gmail.com. Do you agree with what James has done with these Game of Thrones comparisons? Do you see maybe perhaps another character that would fit a little bit better than what James has selected? We want to hear from you at NFU Podcast is our Twitter handle, and you can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, or of course, just search Next Fan Up on Facebook, and the page will show right up for you. It's that easy. Hopefully you are enjoying these division previews. We will have another one for you coming up on Sunday, and more division previews coming up all through the month of June. And as always, I leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.